Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. As states, towns, cities across the country struggle with budget shortfalls, American schools are getting hit hard. Hundreds of thousands of teacher layoffs have been forecast. Many are already gone. And this at a time when education is widely described as the key to long-term economic recovery. We may be losing a generation of American teachers. This hour on Point, we'll talk with educators about the changes hard times are bringing to American classrooms, to students, and to teachers. You can join the conversation. Are the pink slips being mailed out in your school district? How's this going to work? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll go to our educators in a moment, but first let's check in on efforts in Washington to ease the tide of teacher layoffs. Allison Klein has been following the debate in Washington for Education Week. She joins us. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So this is just last week, $80 billion war spending bill and in the House, and $10 billion tucked into it to do what exactly?
Yes, the $10 billion that's included in this bill would go out to states to help them basically save teachers' jobs. It would go out to states based on their population, and the money would be used just to save jobs.
We've seen anywhere from 100,000 up to 300,000 layoffs forecast. How many jobs would this spare?
Well, the administration is projecting that it will stave off about 140,000 teacher layoffs.
So that means there would still be a lot of layoffs, but this $10 billion is only passed the House, not the Senate, and the White House is saying it will veto. Why?
Well, that's actually a great question. The administration and folks in Congress had actually been hoping for even more money than this $10 billion. They'd been trying to get a $23 billion bill passed. But that bill wasn't able to gain support because folks were worried about the impact on the deficit. So the congressional leaders, and that's Representative David Obie, who's the sponsor of the bill, scaled it back to $10 billion. And he also identified about $12 billion in cuts to other programs. But three of the cuts that he wanted to make are to three of the administration's top priorities, and that includes charter schools, pay-for-performance programs for teachers, and the Race to the Top program, which is a $4 billion competition to reward states that have made progress in on adopting certain K-12 policies.
So the House bill would take $500 million or so out of the award money that several dozen states are still competing for in that Race to the Top program.
Exactly. That's exactly what it would do. And folks in those states are really upset. They're quite worried. They're considering this something of a bait and switch. They say they've worked very hard on these applications, and they don't want to see the money go away, in some cases, even at the expense of possibly, you know, of this other legislation to help save teachers' jobs.
Race to the Top is sort of the tip of the Obama administration's spear on school reform. They're saying that, that the president will veto because if you take that money away, you take away the incentive to make the changes they see as necessary.
Yes, that's exactly what the administration is saying. The House, as you said, passed the bill anyway, and it will now move over to the Senate, where there's actually a group of 13 sort of moderate senators who are saying that they're going to look for other ways to pay for this $10 billion legislation without making cuts to those particular programs that the administration doesn't want to see cut.
You know, we're in July already now. Many schools will start again in early mid-August. And still at this point, we've got tens or hundreds of thousands of teachers who don't know if they're going to be cut or back at work.
Yeah, that's a great great point. That's certainly why lawmakers want to act on this as quickly as possible. So you'll see a lot of activity on this when the House and Senate get back from their 4th of July recess.
What's the betting in Washington? Does it look as though there will be some sort of aid to help cities, towns, states forestall these giant waves of layoffs?
You know, that's a great question, and I think it's really up in the air right now. There's certainly a lot of concern about the deficit, and, you know, the cuts that they have proposed to help pay for this $10 million weren't popular with a lot of people. So it'll be kind of an open question whether lawmakers can get it together and get a way to pay for this bill identified before they leave in August.
And Allison, you're there at Education Week. What does it mean to come into the American education system and take out, you know, maybe hundreds of thousands of teachers, presumably a lot of them younger teachers with less seniority, therefore the most vulnerable to layoffs? What does that mean for the structure of this sort of pool of teachers in this country longer term?
Well, that's actually a great question, and I think it'll take quite a few years before we'll really see that played out. Certainly, people who are receiving these layoff notices, you know, maybe looking at other careers, and then we maybe lose these people to the education profession long term.
Wow, incredible. Allison Klein with Education Week joined us. She's been covering the big debate in Washington over whether or not to help states, cities, towns, but through the states, deal with the threat of massive teacher layoffs, many out there already. Allison Klein, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Now to our educators out in the storm. We've got a couple with us, hope for three today, first from all around the country. First from Blackwood, New Jersey, Frank Palatucci is here. He's principal of Highland Regional High School, 1,200 students. He's president of the New Jersey Principals and Supervisors Association. His district, which includes three high schools, lost $3.2 million of its budget this year, has cut 43 positions. Frank Palatucci, thanks very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. How are you? Glad to be with you.
Happy to have you. And from California, we're joined by Lakeisha Carpenter. She's taught kindergarten at the Newfer Elementary School in Norwalk, California for the last 10 years. The school has had 35 teachers. Next year, after layoffs, that number looks more like 28. Lakeisha is one of the layoffs. Lakeisha Carpenter, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So are you formally laid off for sure? Is it still up in the air? We hear about these efforts in Washington to save some of these jobs. Are you out, Lakeisha, or still hanging on?
Formally laid off.
When did you get your pink slip? As of when?
Originally, we were given pink slips back in February. It did not become permanent until the end of May.
Now, if you had one more year of teaching under your belt, as I understand the rules there, you would have been spared 11 years and you're in, but 10 and you're not.
Correct.
Wow.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. What does that mean, I guess, first of all, for the school, your kindergarten teachers, how many kindergarten classes have there been? What will there be next year?
Well, in the past, there have been as many as 5 kindergarten classes. Last year, there was only 3. So this incoming school year, there will only be 2 kindergarten classes, and the max students in class will be anywhere from 28 to 29.
And what has the number of students in those classes been, Lakeisha?
20.
That's a big increase. Is that happening across the board in the school? It was kindergarten in particular they've gone to get these cuts?
No, it's pretty much across the board now. Kindergarten through third used to be 20-1, and now we're going 28-29.
How does the school or the school district explain what they're doing?
They say it's because of the budget cuts. So they have decided to increase class sizes to 28, K-3.
What does it mean for kindergartners, you know, to be in a class of 20 versus being in a class of 29?
It means less one-on-one attention for the students. It means it won't be as much small group instruction. And unfortunately, in my school district, that does mean a lot because we have a lot of students that are English language learners. And it'll be very difficult.
Was this a seniority-based layoffs, Lakeisha? Is that how they did it, Ms. Carpenter?
Pretty much. There were some special consideration for teachers on special assignment. Mm-hmm. Teachers who were who work as literacy coaches were not part of the general layoff.
Right. And what about your career plans now? I mean, what do you do? Do you intend to stay in teaching? You've got 10 years invested in this field.
Exactly. My intention right now is just to wait it out, and hopefully I will get a call back.
From the same school?
Exactly. I'm number 2 on the seniority list throughout the district, so I'm hoping that I'm one of those teachers who receive a call back. And if not, I will be subbing in my district.
But, of course, that's not nearly the same. Frank Palatucci, what's the message of this season of enormous cutbacks to young teachers like Lakeisha around the country?
Well, it's really discouraging, and I was listening to one of the questions you asked earlier about what does that do to the pool of young people coming in or thinking about going into teaching, and it's very chilling. Anyone, any intelligence looking at what's going on is really giving it a second thought about whether this is something they really want to pursue as a career. And it's getting harder and harder from an administrative standpoint to attract the best people we can into the profession. Because they're looking at the lay of the land right now and getting a second guess whether that's something they really want to do.
Yeah, it's pretty rugged out there. Lakeisha, what are you saying to people, younger people, who say to you, should I become a teacher?
Honestly, I don't know what to tell them. We hope that it turns around, but it doesn't look like it is. And for anybody that's currently in school now, it doesn't look great. The job outlook does not look great as far as education is concerned. My district laid off a total, I believe, of 69 teachers.
Wow.
And so we are first in line to be rehired back to the district. So anyone that's new and incoming, they would, they have a max of 3 years to hire us back. So for anybody new that's coming in, that would be 3 years down the line for them.
So if they're just coming out of a teacher college, for example,
exactly,
they've got 69 laid off teachers standing in front of them, hoping, praying, waiting for jobs.
Correct.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American with American educators, about America's schools' sweeping layoffs and big cutbacks. States, cities, towns across the country facing an awful lot of red ink, and in that, layoffs going like gangbusters. Some efforts on Capitol Hill now to staunch that, not clear what the outcome will be there. We've been joined from Blackwood, New Jersey, by Frank Palatucci, principal at the Highland Regional High School. He's also president of the New Jersey Principals and Supervisors Association. From Diamond Bar, California, Lakeisha Carpenter's with us. She taught for 10 years kindergarten at the Newfer Elementary School in Norwalk, Connecticut, laid off this spring. Number two now to be hired back, but who knows if that will happen. And, of course, it's happening right across the country. Joining us now as well from rural Antigo, Wisconsin, is Roxanne Borneman, Antigo's school district administrator. She's dealing with cutbacks and layoffs. Roxanne, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for letting me share Antigo's story with your listeners.
You've got a rural school district there, a lot of territory for not so many kids. But what's the story? What's happening with teachers and cutbacks in your school district?
Well, very similar to what you hear happening in California and in New Jersey. We have problems locally with meeting our budget needs, and this year we've cut $950,000 in order to balance it, and that, again, is at the heart of cutting teaching positions, of which we cut seven positions. We have several layoffs, but Antigo for many years has been using a different method called attrition. So as teachers retire, we do not replace those positions. So it saves some people on layoffs, but you lose experienced teachers. This year, for example, we lost three teachers, each of whom had over 25 years worth of experience.
Okay, you're the superintendent. When
I
you
am.
Sit with parents and look them in the eye and they ask, what's going on with the quality of education here in that kind of environment, what's your answer to them?
My answer when we meet with parents and community groups, which I do regularly, is that the problem is we don't have enough revenue to cover our budget, and we get a lot of pressure to run our public schools like businesses,
mm-hmm.
and we actually have. Over the last 10 years here, we have closed schools. We used to have 12 elementary schools. We cover 540 square miles of rural north central Wisconsin with mm-hmm. 2,500 students. So we're actually a rural area, but we have a small number of students who are spread out throughout that area. And so in an effort to be more efficient, we have closed schools, but that also comes at a cost because families prefer having what would be perceived as their neighborhood school in their rural areas.
So that's the explanation for why you're doing it. But when they
right.
ask the hard question about the quality of education that their children are getting to go out and compete in a very tough global economy, what do you say to them against the backdrop of these cutbacks?
I think that the answer is education is being negatively impacted with this continuing consistent reduction in teaching positions. I think teachers are the heroes. I think public education in general has taken on somewhat of a suspect in the public's eye, thinking that public education doesn't do as well as private schools. If something is funded through, as it is in Wisconsin, property taxes, you're always under intense scrutiny to ensure that you're utilizing those tax dollars in the best manner possible. However, in Wisconsin, we have revenue caps. Back in 1993, our state legislature enacted a revenue cap ceiling. So whatever you were spending at that point in time, you were held to that level of spending unless your enrollment increased. In many districts throughout the state, if they have a flat student enrollment or they're declining about 40 students as we are each year, you never have enough revenue to cover your increase in expenses, which is about 3 to 4%. 80% of our costs are, in fact, our personnel, and they're highly qualified, and they're at the heart of what we do. So we can't run it like a factory. You cut back suddenly, and you can be more efficient. We're working with children, and you need highly experienced teachers who are professionals who require a great deal of post-secondary education.
Yeah, I'm reading here from Tom Harkin, Iowa Democrat Senate, who says you can't just push the pause button on kids' education and say, wait a minute, it just doesn't work that way. Frank Palatucci in New Jersey, you know, as someone who's not an educator, I'm trying to get a sense of the significance of these figures. If it's 100,000 or 200 or even 300,000 layoffs being forecast here, is this an epic change in the staffing of American schools? Is this just sort of trimming at the margins? How do you look at it, Frank?
Well, it's even more than that. I mean, first of all, the cutbacks you're talking about, people being laid off is one thing, but you also, and I don't know what's going on in Wisconsin or California, but we also have almost a mass exit of experienced people who are retiring because they are concerned about the viability of their pension system moving forward. So we're laying off young people, and we're also losing experienced people, and it's scary. I mean, it's throwing the possibility of throwing actuarial tables out the window with pensions, plus the fact you also have people that are being picked up on unemployment that weren't anticipated in the past. So it's really, as the previous speaker, as being superintendent, was saying, it's really has a corrosive effect overall on what's going on. Plus the fact, probably Wisconsin and California, the same thing, that the two areas, or a couple of areas that people go after right away are arts, sports, that these are viewed very often as fluff, as extras, and unfortunately they are not. That's an opportunity where kids get to, learn a whole range of things they don't necessarily pick up in a classroom, and can apply things in the classroom that they wouldn't be able to do that any other way.
Absolutely,
it's disturbing. It's very, very disturbing. I've been an educator in my 40th year, and I have never seen it this bad. And in New Jersey, again, I can't speak for Wisconsin and California, teachers are being portrayed as the villain. We are the reason why the state's in an $11 billion hole. We do a little bit of research on it, that is anything but the truth, but it's an easy talking point, and people are buying into it. So you have people online in the supermarkets anymore that, instead of feeling real good and very proud about the fact that they're an educator, almost try to avoid the conversation completely. Wow. It's really sad. It's really sad what's going on top to bottom.
And the economy, very, very tough around all this out there. Some people critical of teachers, others raising Cain about some of the layoffs. Here's a little clip of something that's been running on television in California. Here's movie star Megan Fox and her fiancé, Brian Austin Green, whose son actually attends Wonderland Avenue Elementary School in Los Angeles. They made this video to protest school budget cuts in California. Here's Megan Fox, movie hottie, accidentally walking into a classroom with upwards of 50 kids.
You are a new teacher?
Sweet!
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I just thought this was the library. Wait, you guys don't have a teacher?
She was laid off.
And then they combine our class with another teacher's class.
The kids in this room are multiplying faster than my head lice.
Kids multiplying faster than head lice. Great. Lakeisha Carpenter, do you have a sense of where these cuts are hitting hardest in California? What kind of communities will this be toughest for?
It'll be toughest for the low-income communities.
Because they are already stretched, or don't the layoffs hit everywhere? I mean, everybody's economy is down, I guess.
Yes, the economy is definitely down. The layoffs are hitting everywhere. But in wealthier neighborhoods, parents have decided to, you could say, sponsor or donate
right.
money to keep their staff the same. Unfortunately, in the area that I work in, it is a low-income area, and parents don't have the money to do that.
You can't just throw a fundraiser and gather up a few teachers' salaries overnight.
Exactly.
Boy, we've got a lot of listeners calling in on this subject. Let's go to Warrensburg, New York, and Linda. Hi, Linda. You've been listening. What do you see in your town, in your school, Linda?
Well, I come from a rural town, so it's like Wisconsin, but it's not as big in an area. And very much everything that's being said is what has happened in our town. We had five board members who were business people, so for the last 5 years, they've been doing cut because they didn't want their school taxes to be increased.
Sure, right.
And they have gotten rid of teachers, gotten rid of programs. They would complain because the ratio would be smaller, but then we have a lot of 504 and IEP students, and by federal law, they have to have small numbers.
What does that mean, 504 IEP?
Well, it's kids. I have two children that are 504, which means that they have a high IQ, but they either have attention problems, they have retention of material problems, so they would go to a regular class, but then they would go to a structured study hall, and
right.
In a structured study hall, you have to have a special ed teacher.
And those programs...
I had my kid go from flunking math to getting a 94 in 1 year because of a structured study hall.
And that kind of support is under the gun now.
Well, this teacher has 22 years, so they're keeping her. In our school district, we lost a global studies teacher. She was a first-year teacher. The kids loved global studies.
Is that like social studies? That's what they call it?
Yeah, social studies. Mm-hmm. It was the first half. In New York State, we have regions.
Yep, brand-new teacher.
First 2 years of social studies.
Mm-hmm.
Then they take the regions for global studies as a sophomore.
And it was she had 1 year, and she's gone?
And she's gone. And you know, I said to her, well, what are you going to do? She says, well, I'm lucky. My husband makes good money. I'm just going to stop being a teacher and start a family.
Wow. But the kids loved her. Apparently, she must have been a good teacher, and she's out of there. Linda, thanks for your call. Roxanne, what do you say to young teachers or those thinking of going into teaching when they look at this situation?
I tell them that education is an excellent profession. Right now, it's certainly challenging to find positions. But undoubtedly, we're going to need good quality schools, and teachers are at the heart of what student achievement is all about. So I encourage young people to go into education, despite the discouraging environment right now.
But do they cock their eyebrow at you? I mean, Lakeisha describes, 69 laid-off teachers in her district in California that would all come ahead of a new college grad looking for a job.
No, again, I believe that education truly is one of the most important institutions we have.
Mm-hmm.
In our little small community here, education, good health care, we're kind of the pillars of what goes on. I think one of the other challenging pieces in a small community, I can't speak to a larger urban environment.
Mm-hmm.
However, our municipal governments are also struggling. So what happens is there's competition for tax dollars. So are you going to repair potholes? Are you going to replace a police officer? Are you going to perhaps replace a social worker through county social services? Or are you going to give more money to our schools? So what I see is an increasingly competitive environment for shrinking tax dollars.
All over this country, including in schools. Let's get more calls.
Yeah.
Kevin, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My sort of question is, they made the comment earlier about, teachers feeling like they're the villains, and certainly that would not be my point.
But being treated that way these days sometimes anyway, yeah.
Yes, but at the same time, one of the things that it seems like there's a little resentment, at least in our neck of the woods,
mm-hmm.
that, public employees, of which teachers are, seem to have traditionally had, pretty nice pensions and pretty nice health insurance plans, maybe even better than what the private sector has had.
Mm-hmm.
And the private
mm-hmm.
sector has cut back on those types of things, made more of the health insurance burden on the employee in order to keep more people
yep.
rather than, you know, spend it on the benefits. And if the goal is to keep the teachers, and I know there's union contracts and things involved,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, maybe we need to look at that at least at some level if it means keeping more teachers in the building, which is, I think, the goal.
Well, there's a lot of pressure exactly along that line right now we're reading here. Kevin, let us pick it up with our educators, Frank Palatucci. How about it? Two things. First, I'm sure you've heard this, but Kevin and many others now looking at public employees and saying, wow, you know, I haven't had a pension for years. My insurance isn't too good. Yours looks pretty good. We got all this red ink. What about looking again at those contracts? Is that what it's going to come to?
Well, it might. But in all fairness, and again, I can only speak from the standpoint of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
The New Jersey teachers' pension fund back in the early 90s was one of the strongest ones in the country. And the state government at the time, under Governor Whitman, began to borrow against the pension. And at the same time, and it tied in with the public employees' pension systems as well. There were all kinds of deals cut and exceptions and all sorts of arrangements made when we were flying high in that,
right.
that high tech bubble as it was going through.
Mm-hmm.
For 11 out of the last 15 years in New Jersey, the state has paid zero into the pension system. I haven't missed one of my payments
mm-hmm.
at all.
Right.
And I think that I can speak for myself, and I think for the administrators, and I think also for teachers, is that no one is I think, looking at askance at you know, contributing or cutting back, but we'd like it to be fair, and that the state has to pony up in terms of what they have committed to us as well. Secondly, the woman who was speaking, one of the callers you had her
mm-hmm.
a little while ago was talking about special ed and 504,
right.
And all of the race to the top stuff and all of the possible billions of dollars to try to save teachers' jobs. Here's what I'd like the federal government to do. I'd like the federal government to make good on the promise that when they established special education laws back in 1975 to pick up 40% of the excess costs. Right now, it's hovering around 17.
So they're not making good. Frank, your line's a little rough, but I think you're saying that they're not making good on what they promised to cover there. And maybe they would step up, but then, I mean, you've got trouble all over. The federal government's got huge red ink problems of its own. Roxanne, you're listening there in Wisconsin. Where do you think this is going? Do you see massive renegotiations of contracts or just fewer teachers, worse ratios?
Well, in our district, well, maybe speaking first from Wisconsin, our Wisconsin pension fund has been noted as being very well managed.
Great.
So although there is pressure on it, undoubtedly, from the public related to the comment about very rich benefits for public employees, our pension in Wisconsin right now is stable. On the issue of negotiations, our local unions here, and again, you can't always generalize that all unions are a bad influence.
Mm-hmm.
Locally here, we were faced with a 14% increase in health insurance. We sat down with our three unions. We studied renegotiating different contracts related to other insurance companies, and we have been successful in that effort. However, those rates continue to climb, and we can't always control those costs. We've instituted, for example, a wellness program, but that's a long-term plan to address the cost
sure.
of benefits. And we also have instituted a high deductible plan, which I believe is one of the first in the state. We have HSAs and an HRA and a $10,000 high deductible plan.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with American educators about American schools sweeping layoffs and big cutbacks right across the country as the economy has just bitten into everything and a lot of biting of the bullet. 100, 200, 300,000 layoffs of teachers anticipated in this season as we're now staring at the new school year coming across summer here. Roxanne Borneman joins us from rural Antigo, Wisconsin. She's the school district administrator there. Frank Palatucci is with us. He's president of the New Jersey Principals and Supervisors Association, principal at Highland Regional High School since 1992. And Lakeisha Carpenter is with us from Diamond Bar, California. She put in 10 years teaching kindergarten at the Newfer Elementary School, lost that job just a couple of months ago, hoping to get it back. But who knows when and if and how that will happen. Lots of callers. Andrea in Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Andrea, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, good.
Well, I'm calling because I am a six-year teacher, or a veteran for 6 years.
Okay.
And this, I just got laid off from my second school, and I was fortunate enough to find another job rather quickly. But when I interviewed and met with the human resources director, she told me that I was one of over 150 applicants for one position.
Wow, you must be good, but that's a scary number.
It is a very scary number, and I applied to well over 20 different positions and only received a few interviews and a few callbacks. And I count myself very lucky to have a job because I have many friends who are also educators and they cannot find jobs.
So what do you think about what's going on here overall, Andrea?
You know, the town I taught in had a tax override, mm-hmm. and it passed, and my job was safe for 1 year. But when I resigned, my principal told me that most likely would not have a position next year, and the tax override would not pass probably a second year. And I think that for especially the state of Massachusetts, which values education, I believe above other state programs, I think that the premium we place on education is not nearly high enough. And I believe another caller was speaking about our unions taking over and our unions supporting our health insurance.
Yeah.
And my district did not pay a very large percentage of our insurance, and so a significant portion of my check went to cover my health insurance.
So let it be noted, you're saying it was not a free ride in your case, but then when there's cutbacks all over, I mean, what are towns actually supposed to do? Andrea, thank you for your call, and good luck to you. I'm glad you found another job there. It sounds like a jungle. Sean in Hartford, Connecticut. Sean, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thanks
Hi.
For taking my call.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to mention the fact that, you know, this is more of a long-term problem than we'd like to lead ourselves to believe. As a, I'm a young teacher in a magnet school for the arts.
Okay.
And we've been kind of a limbo in the fact that we've had to kind of jump through hoops for the past few years just to try and, you know, make ends meet in getting state funds. As you know, magnet schools are kind of in this kind of a gray area.
Gray zone, yeah, yeah.
Between public and private. So, you know, I see a big drop-down effect in, I know that you mentioned that we could be losing an entire generation of teachers. Well, that translates into losing an entire generation of students. And just from the few years that I've been teaching, I can see, you know, the incredible, incredible good in the investment of one teacher, because that investment then translates into so many students. So, you know, what does that say about young students who are coming out of college, who want to get into education, particularly what I'm doing is arts education, which seems to be the first thing that suffers in economic hardship.
Right.
And,
though, look right across the board, you start having bigger class sizes and, you know, cutting back on remedial education, you're going to be hitting science and math and everything else in addition to arts. You know, Sean, I've got a Facebook comment here from Kenny. He says, I don't know how we expect teachers to excel in such an unstable environment. Says we can pretend that layoffs have no effect on the quality of education, but the results say otherwise. The question we need to ask is, what will our education system look like compared to other countries in 10 or 20 years? And it sounds like that's where you're looking, Sean. I mean, Frank, how do you look at that? We've got real global competition here. We're told you want a long-term economic comeback. You've got to do better, not worse, on education, Frank.
Well, there's no question, and it's one of these situations where, you know, we've got to do more than talk a good game about this. But we look at international comparisons also. Be very careful, because we're very good at beating ourselves up when you take a look at global comparisons. But global comparisons are very tricky things. For instance, in China, and China is a economic juggernaut right now, but the last statistics I looked at, close to half of the high school age kids in China aren't in school. So we're comparing with kids who are basically cream of the crop in China as opposed to the United States, where we make an attempt, to our credit, as far as I'm concerned, to educate everybody.
Yeah, but even
everybody,
so, that they're turning out way more, even so, they're turning out a whole lot more,
risk.
They're turning out a whole lot more engineers than we are. But what are you suggesting there, Frank, that we let half of our kids not graduate high school, that that's what our new economy requires?
Absolutely not. That's not what I'm saying. What mm-hmm. I'm saying is that in our country, we spend tremendous amounts of resources, particularly at the most at-risk kids, to give them second, third, fourth, fifth chances. That's not what's happening in other countries at all, at all. So if you're going to make comparisons, we have to be very fair, and I think be very careful that we're comparing apples to apples when we're beginning to take a look at foreign countries.
Yeah.
Educational systems compared to ours.
Well, I agree with you. On the other hand, China's several times larger than the United States, and even if they only educate a fraction, you know, as well or better than ours, we're still in that head-to-head competition economically. Let me get a call from Yuma, Arizona. Mark, you're on the air, Mark.
Oh, yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a principal of an elementary school, and it's interesting the questions you're asking, especially the one about the parents speaking to the superintendent or even speaking to a principal. What they want to know is, yes, they understand cutbacks and those kind of things with education, but what they do want to know is, how is this affecting the quality of education
of course.
For my child,
mm-hmm.
which would take a long time to answer to a parent. Yes, it does have an effect. The biggest effect is the quality of the teacher. And we get fewer teachers, and of course, and we have probably less quality. But we do need to think about some things. I think in the nature of competition, yes, it's global and competitive, but education has a slightly different purpose in that a Walmart or other institutions, they're under no obligation to necessarily stay in business. They're supposed to because they have their shareholders, et cetera, but they can shrink this, close that, or something, or do something else with it.
Right.
In public education, we're obligated to provide a high quality of education to absolutely everyone that comes in the door.
That doesn't mean we do it, as you well know, though, Mark. That doesn't mean we necessarily fulfill that obligation.
Well, yes, we do. Public schools do fulfill that obligation because that's the legal obligation they have. What I mean is, it's not to say, oh, poor us, we shouldn't have to compete or anything else. It's a realization that some public school somewhere, if we allow parent choice, mm-hmm. all these kind of things, when people pick and choose, somebody somewhere is going to have to take, not like a Walmart that actually has to serve a customer that comes mm-hmm. in, whether they have money or not. We have the obligation to serve people, whether or not they can pay, even if their child is disruptive, et cetera. So those things kind of weigh on the system. That's not an excuse. It just means we have to be careful when we frame the conversation of competition or of hard times, et cetera.
No, I understand that. But, you know, it's a tough world, and there is global economic competition whether we like it or not. And the question still comes back to how well-educated Americans are going to be, and maybe even back to looking that parent in the eye when they ask about the quality of education when you've had layoffs and the class size goes from 15 or 20 to 30, can you really look at them and say, it's the same, it's good?
Oh, no, well, yes, you can look at them and say, depending on your circumstance, that yes, it's good, et cetera, but you can't deny we're going to about 30 to 1, for example, in ours and district-wide, and other districts are probably having a more difficult problem. You can't deny to a parent, hey, your kid had 24 was with 24 other children 3 years ago, and now they're with 30, that you have to be up front and say, I cannot handle that problem. Even if the superintendent can't do that. That's an effect of the economy. That is a world we need to live in. Public education doesn't need to deny that. The way you get quality is a big picture, but you hire the best people you can. You train them. You keep monitoring them. You look at their classroom practices. You try to give them the best support you can with the instructional aids and those kind of things.
Yeah, I hear your commitment, and I'm very glad for it. And I hope you've got the resources to hit that mark, Mark, in Yuma. Thanks for calling. Lynn in Faber, Virginia. Lynn, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to respond to the caller who talked about teachers having so many perks. I am a teacher. I work really hard. My colleagues work very hard
mm-hmm.
With America's children, your children. And, you know, this is our greatest resource. And to talk about denying our children a free and an appropriate education is unfounded.
But what should happen, Lynn, when the economy kind of falls apart as it has in the last year? A lot of people have lost jobs, houses, you know, local budgets. You must know. I mean, they're a mess.
A special education teacher, you wouldn't believe the number of homeless students I had this year.
Yeah.
But these are our children. These are, you know, American children, and we need to support them with a free and appropriate education.
Boy, I couldn't agree with you more. But Frank, how do you make it happen when the economy is so bad?
Well, that's the problem. That's the rub on this one. I think part of it is that the country itself, and I think individual states, needs to take a real hard look at the way in which we have funded education in the past that perhaps has worked for us that is not working any longer. You're talking about global competition again. If you take a look at what different countries spend on education as a percentage of the gross national product, the United States of America is down the list quite a ways. And you know, the education has been pretty much left as a individual state responsibility. And each individual state takes their own spin on it. New Jersey, for instance, we are always like the bottom 10 in terms of the percentage of state funds used to support schools. Now, when the economy goes bad, obviously that makes the situation even worse. But turning it back over to local municipalities and expecting local taxpayers to pick up the tab and pick up the difference, not only for the schools, but also for the municipalities, for the federal government. At some point, you get to a diminishing return, and there's people getting angry. And unfortunately, again, I can't speak for any other state in New Jersey, but the drumbeat has been for the last year or so that the educators and the teachers and the school systems are at the root cause of why the state is in such a financial mess.
Well, I've got a web comment here, Frank, from Tom, who says the problem in education, the problems are the fault of parents. He says you get what you pay for. I guess implication is maybe higher taxes are the answer, but that's...
Teachers will say, well, they weren't prepared in the middle schools, and the middle schools will say they weren't prepared in the elementaries. I think we need to stop all that. I mean, the bottom line is, it is what it is, what we got, and despite all of the challenges we have, let's start looking forward to where we need to be, in terms of we're also in some parts of the country, New Jersey is not any different, and we were having waves of immigrant children that we have to deal with. We have in our district, we have 42 different languages that we handle.
Wow. 42, that's a big number. Lakeisha, you're listening there in California. I've got a Facebook comment here I want to put to you. This is from Deb, and she says it's terrible that young teachers are being let go. She says she has a 17-year-old son, 21-year-old son. They went to the same high school. The really good teachers there, she says, were the younger teachers. She says, I hate to say this, but a lot of older teachers, not all, but a lot, were the ones they had trouble with. What do you think is the effect, Lakeisha, in your school district, of those 69 younger teachers being bled out of the system, on the overall morale, on quality?
Overall, I mean, it's going to make a huge difference. A lot of the parents, once they found out who the teachers were that were being let go, were very upset about it. It is because, unfortunately, in most cases, the younger teachers are those who are more into teaching, I guess you can say, or more willing to go the extra mile with all the extra activities and everything.
Right.
So it's going to make a difference.
Roxanne, in Wisconsin, it's your congressman, David Obie, who's just helped shepherd through this House bill, hasn't passed the Senate yet, but that the White House is threatening to veto because it will take $500 million or so, I guess, away from the Race for the Top program. He said it's kind of a joke to say that they're being harsh with that. Are you hopeful that Congress is going to come up with relief for your school district and others on this front? Is your congressman taking the right position there, saying the White House should just bite the bullet on losing some money in that program?
Dave Obie has always been a real passionate supporter of education. He's located about 30 miles from us in Wausau. Mm-hmm. And I actually am supportive of his bill. I think he's right. It's only a short-term solution, just like the money that was released by Obama to the school districts. It was short-term. But right now, in some of our districts, we are simply desperate enough that we will take whatever money we can and invest it as best we can. We're tired of being put in positions like Sophie's Choice. What's going to go? The fine arts, is it going to be an English teacher, as I had to do? Regular content area teachers are gone, meaning class sizes have increased. So I'm open to any suggestions, and I think this legislation is reasonable. I'm concerned that when it gets to the Senate, what kind of support it's going to get, and I'm hearing that Obama actually may veto it because of its using some of the funds for Race to the Top. And I'm supportive of that Race to the Top funding as well, but only two states receive that funding nationally
so far.
In the first round in the grants.
How long can you hold this kind of tight diet here before...
We can't. We're anorexic. I mean, I keep telling people that by the time the public, I think, is truly understanding the devastation that's going on and stops blaming specific elements of it because it's a complex problem we have, I think it's going to be too late. A lot of our infrastructure here in our small community is starting to diminish. I have over $3 million of infrastructure capital improvements that we need to be taking care of in these buildings that we've invested in. Whether they're old or not, they need to be taken care of. And I'm not even able to afford that funding.
Do your parents want to hear this? Do they want to hear we might need higher...
Our parents do hear it. I think the dilemma that they're in is, are they able to support an increase in taxes right now in order to overcome some of the problems we have?
Boy.
And it is difficult.
Yeah, I guess. It sounds like we just scratched the surface of that difficulty today, but you've given us a lot of insight, and I'm grateful for it. Roxanne Berneman in the Antico School District in Upper Wisconsin. Thank you very much for joining us, Ms. Berneman.
Thank you.
And Lakeisha Carpenter in California. Lakeisha, we wish you the best of luck. Hang in there. We hope something good comes to you soon.
Thanks, Tom.
Frank Palatucci, New Jersey, thanks very much for joining us. Frank, good luck there.
Thank you.
Listeners, thank you for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.